Blog Talk Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
A good show for you today. Sometimes, you know, I'm going to tell you it's a good show, and maybe it isn't such a great show. But today's Political Universe radio show really is something else. Our topic for today is violence in America. The tragedy at Virginia Tech last week made me wonder why America has such a violent society. Or more appropriately, does America have a violent society? Some people want to solely blame guns for the incident at Virginia Tech and every other incident, but I see the gun more as just an instrument. People can kill other people by using cars, or even in the case of 9/11, airplanes, too. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, violent crimes have only declined in America over the past three decades. Except for a spike in 1994, violent crime has steadily dropped to the rate of 21 per thousand in 2005. So that's going to be our topic for the first half hour. You're free to join us on the show by dialing area code 718-664-6734 or using AIM Instant Messenger username CAPJ71. That'll get you right through the show. Right now, let me bring in, instead of our usual bevy of co-hosts, I have but one. George is our co-host today.
Hello, Jason.
George. Hi,
Jason.
George. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Now, I want to remind everybody that we're not only going to have our regular discussion on our topic of the week, we're also going to be having a special guest commentary from the Walker Mains at around 1:55, and it's after the 2 o'clock news, even though Will's not here in body, he's here with the news in spirit. We're going to go right to Leonard Hayhurst, and we're going to talk a little movies, entertainment, and hopefully get away from some of the heavier political stuff. So, George, is America a violent country?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a violent country ever since its, basically ever since its birth. You know, like really, and this has just been something that's been a part of our you could say heritage, for hundreds of years now.
Okay, so you think the violence is a part of our cultural genetics, basically?
It's just something that we as a nation and everything basically tend to gravitate towards. If I recall correctly, a while back, I remember hearing either on this show or on Bill Maher a couple of weeks ago or on one of the other shows.
Good to know that you only watch those two shows or listen to those two shows.
It was on
Bill Maher, nothing.
Right.
He's reading the book.
But I do recall someone basically talking about the Civil War. That's what made me think of this show, because
yeah.
I know that Will is a big advocate.
Will's out fighting the Civil War again this week. I didn't want to spoil the ending for him, so I didn't tell him.
What's that?
Will's out fighting the Civil War again this week, and I didn't want to spoil the ending, so I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, we all have our own battles to fight, so.
Well, okay, now let's get on to a little bit about Virginia Tech here. Why do shootings like Virginia Tech seem to be a uniquely American problem?
I would basically say it's because of the history of different people who are basically resorts of this sort of violence in order to solve their own problems. I mean, this is something that that we've seen happen, you know, many times over. You know, like we've seen it happen. Obviously, we saw it happen with Columbine. We saw it happen, you know, like with various other mass murderers in our country. They're actually doing a subject on various mass murderers on MSNBC this morning. It's just something that.
Bill Maher.
What's that?
You watch something else besides Bill Maher?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Thankfully.
That you watch MSNBC and Bill Maher.
I'm trying to broaden my horizons, you know, and what better way to do that than watching just MSNBC and Bill Maher.
You're growing more every week on this show, and people can just see you sprout like a flower of intellectual development. now, they're doing a feature on MSNBC on mass murders this morning.
Yes.
Where are you left off, of course? I rudely interrupted you.
That's okay. is your volume a little low?
Are you having trouble hearing me today?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm experimenting with a new microphone. Let me go back to the old method.
And we seem to have some dead air for several seconds. And we seem to have some more dead air for several more seconds.
Okay, everybody.
Sorry about that.
Yes. I went to unhook the microphone and I cut myself off. I unhooked the microphone and forgot to hit the talk button on the telephone. Yeah, yep. I went to speak to you, George, and you weren't there.
Yes.
And then a wave of panic swept over me because I thought I broke Blog Talk Radio.
Shall we start over?
I broke the entire network. I feel like just playing the music and starting over, but now we're professionals. We'll keep going forward.
We'll just push our way through. This is it's all about
our massive listenership will just have to kind of deal with me sometimes doing stupid things.
Yes, I can definitely say I can hear you much better now. So
yeah, I was the microphone, and I was having trouble hearing everything else.
Yeah.
And I think I was picking up Armed Forces Radio, like in Spinal Tap.
Oh, okay.
I was getting all kinds of stuff in the background.
I was wondering where heavy duty was coming from.
Yeah. It goes to 11, George.
Oh, yes.
Better than 10. okay, George, now, when we now the shootings at Virginia Tech, are they a uniquely American problem?
I want to say that yes, it is. I mean, we've seen other instances where, you know, around the world, where this is, where we've seen like other shootings, other, you know, like you say, like, you know, like you know, different attacks such as this. But at the same time, it seems like they only happen when the American culture comes in and to that country. That seems to be like around the time when that starts to happen. And it's just something that really, it's very difficult to explain. A lot of people are trying to put the blame on different elements, especially pop culture. You know, like, you know, I'm surprised Marilyn Manson's name hasn't popped up at all, like, this week.
Is Marilyn Manson still relevant? I mean, isn't it somebody else now? Isn't it gangsta rappers?
Oh, yes. Well, gangster rappers were relevant a couple of weeks ago with Imus.
Well, Imus was sort of the shock jock gangster rapper of the white person, 67-year-old field. Now, I got to ask you, would stricter gun control laws have done anything to prevent the situation? And is it hard about gun control?
It's not so much about gun control. It's all about people basically kind of paying attention to the background checks. That seems to be the main problem, is that, you know, like, this is a, you know, this particular student was, you know, like, was institutionalized back in, like, 2005. Mm-hmm. He's had histories of stalking, of, you know, like, very, you know, like, you say, like,
mental illness.
Violent behavior and everything. And yet, just to go ahead and, you know, send him one, basically, you know, just to basically sell him a handgun, shows that nobody was really paying any attention to his background, and that's the main problem right there.
I do think the laws we have are fine.
Yes,
and we need to enforce those laws.
Right. I mean, I know.
About half the guns that are sold in this country are sold at gun shows,
mm-hmm.
and gun shows don't require a background check.
Right.
And the NRA and others have been fighting so that there is no background check. My opinion is, if you have to wait a little longer to get your handgun or a collectible, if it keeps everybody safe, what's the problem?
Right. It's very much like that basically has a lot to do with many other laws that are put out in this country, saying how the laws themselves are just fine. The problem is that they're not enforced.
Yeah,
that's where we get into trouble all the time. It's not so.
And
much
I think a lot of people are blaming Virginia Tech here for not seeing the warning signs.
Virginia Tech does deserve some blame though, and the main reason, the main thing that I would blame them for was for not closing the school when the first shots were heard.
Somebody read my column this week. Yes, exactly. my thinking is, when you have a shooter running around, and Blacksburg is a college town.
Yes.
Blacksburg is a college town, just like many other college towns across the country.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a shooter, either, it doesn't matter if that shooter is on or off campus, when you have a shooter at large, you close things down.
Yes.
Or you at least keep people where they are.
Yeah, don't have it set up so that it's like, so that it becomes like a video game to this kid. You know, it's just like,
it's not business as usual.
Right.
I mean, you have someone running around who's already shot two people. To me, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I got a little bit of email this week telling me I was Monday morning quarterbacking on this, but I think that it's got to be a uniform standard. When you, whether you're a college, university, or whatever, when there's a gunman on the loose, Think about what happens whenever one of these workplace rampages happen. I mean, it's almost instant standard procedure that if somebody shows up with a gun somewhere, everybody else locks down around that area.
Right.
Because not only are you
basically looking out for the safety and well-being of the people that are still alive, but at the same time, you are also isolating that particular worker who is on the rampage.
I mean, it's disgraceful that this young man was able to go to the post office, mail his package.
Right.
It's sad.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody somewhere, there should have been a police alert that there's a shooter out running around. I don't know if you blame the university for that or more the local law enforcement community, or maybe the law enforcement doesn't have the staffing to do that kind of thing. But there was a breakdown there. And you know what the university should have? They should have closed the school or at least left everybody on lockdown for an extra hour or two.
Yes, definitely.
They had 2 hours. Usually people don't get 2 hours worth of warning before something like this happens. They had a warning. Their warning was the dorm shooting.
Right. And, you know, like, there's really no more specific warning than you can get.
Then I've already shot people
fired.
And you haven't found me.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I know, you know, some people are like, well, that's easy to say now. But I'm telling you, just from looking at security policy and basic safety procedures, this isn't exclusive to this type of incident. This is basic standard security procedure, emergency procedure.
Exactly.
And they didn't follow it. They might have it, but they didn't follow it. And I do think that, I wrote this earlier this week, I do think that universities are somewhat, they always felt that they were immune to that. That kind of violence was high school violence. It wouldn't happen on a college campus.
Right.
And it did. They were a little naive about it. So stricter gun control laws really aren't going to help. The other thing I read here and there this week on the interweb,
mm-hmm.
was some people were saying that this was an act of terrorism.
No. It was not an act of terrorism. It was a disturbed kid who saw this as the only method to kind of lash out at the people who had supposedly wronged him.
Because NBC, all the stuff from the NBC, they labeled it a manifesto, or Brian Williams and NBC did.
Right.
And that sort of led people to think it was terrorism. What it really was an extended suicide note.
Yes.
It was a multimedia suicide note.
Yeah, it was a multimedia murder suicide. You know, like that was.
I mean, he was just explaining incoherently as possible his rationale for what he did. And I mean, let's be honest. There are people that always try to apply logic to these situations, and this situation isn't logical.
No, it's not.
It's completely irrational, and I don't fault the university for missing any so-called warning signs because. I mean, when you have a campus with tens of thousands of kids trying to pick out the truly, truly dangerous people from the people that are just having trouble adjusting to college, from the people that are just social oddballs, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. I mean, yeah, they did have warning, but he's 23. He was an adult at the time. They recommended him for counseling. He didn't go.
Right.
They can't make him go.
And he's had situations where he has, you know, scared students, stalked students. One of the professors threatened to quit if he wasn't taken out of her class.
If anything, they didn't see the big picture.
Right.
They saw isolated incident. They didn't put it all together to say this kid has a real problem.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that is Monday morning quarterbacking. I think that it's so hard to do with that many kids in a huge campus to just pick one out.
Yeah,
it's
Virginia Tech is a very large campus. You know, like I've walked around, you know, like places like, you know, like Virginia Tech, University of Richmond, because I used to live in that area, and there were friends of mine that had gone to Virginia Tech, and even though they came and went much sooner before this happened, it's still something that. You know, that does strike a chord. That definitely hits home because that was a place that I was familiar with.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it hits everybody that's ever spent time on a college campus anywhere.
Yeah,
but especially on a larger campus. Like my school basically has 12,000 to 15,000 students. It varies. The town here is only 1 square mile, but when everybody's in session, there's about 30,000 people here,
right.
Which is why I think it would be so hard to find that one bad apple.
Right, but at the same time, though, you know, like I know this sounds a lot like more Monday morning quarterbacking, but at the same time, there were so many different signs that were there that there was something different, very, very different about this particular kid. The way that he completely chose to isolate himself from his roommates. Now, that's the one thing that I don't understand. This is one thing I really don't understand. Why this kid had a roommate in the first place.
Why this kid? Well, he had like 5 of them, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, when I went to Marymount Manhattan College, so I was not given the campus life because it was a, you know, my college had about, you know, 3,000 students in it, and we were told, quote unquote, New York City is your campus. That was basically their way of saying, you know, you can basically kind of go out and do whatever you want.
It was a commuter school, essentially.
Basically, yes. And it was a great school. I loved going there. And I really liked the fact that there was this total freedom to go around because you learn so much more when you're in that environment. But at the same time, I also had friends that were able to get rooms by themselves without any problems.
Yeah.
And it seemed it seemed like considering the warning signs that they have seen with this kid, he looked like, and also considering the fact that he was already institutionalized, he was somebody who could possibly be, quote, a danger to himself and others.
Yeah, I think that's inexcusable, the fact that he was institutionalized, and it didn't show up on his record anywhere.
Right.
When he went to buy a gun.
Yeah. And that goes right back to what we were talking about at the very beginning. It's not the fact that the rules have to be added. It's that the rules have to be enforced. There's a difference there. It's not about bringing in new rules. It's about enforcing the old ones.
By the way, if Cho would have been white, would this be? Would anyone even think of this as an act of terrorism?
Well, people look at look at Timothy McVeigh as an act of terrorism, and
that was an act of terrorism,
right?
When you blow up a federal building and kill people, that's an act of terrorism.
Exactly, but at the same time, though, I don't think people would would judge it goes right back to what we were talking about last week about racial tendencies, and it is something that people do keep in mind. It's something that it's one of those difficult questions that can that's really difficult to answer.
But I also think our culture has been influenced now where we want to see everything where a few people die as an act of terrorism.
Right.
It makes it easier to rationalize such a senseless act. If we can just say, well, he was a terrorist. Well, what he did wasn't terrorism. It was strictly mass murder.
Right.
He wasn't. I try to explain the difference between terrorism and mass murder is a terrorist usually has some sort of political or ideological agenda.
Right.
There's a reason, and killing necessarily isn't the point of terrorism.
No, it's about making a statement.
Spread terror.
It's about making a statement.
Yeah, it's about making a statement and spreading terror. It's about spreading fear.
Right.
The thing in Virginia Tech, the kid wanted to kill.
Right.
He just wanted to kill, kill, kill. That's not terrorism.
But at the same time, I can understand why people would consider this to be terrorism because by going around and killing and killing and killing, he created fear.
Yeah.
And
that wasn't really his intention.
No, it wasn't his intention. His intention was to basically strike back at the people who had quote unquote wronged him.
Yeah.
But by doing it in such a way, they basically, he basically succeeded in creating fear. And by sending his, very odd manifesto on both, paper and videotape, he was basically saying, now the world, now the world will know my, my pain, now the world will know my message and everything, and...
I have to ask you, speaking of the manifesto and the videotape, how do you think the media handled this story?
The media is in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation right now. They have been slammed for reporting too much. They have been slammed for reporting too little. They are trying their best to do whatever they can to get to get the facts out. But the problem is that they continue to paint themselves as soulless, story grabbing schmucks.
Yeah.
By handling it the way they did. And I'm still not 100% certain as to whether or not they should have aired that tape.
I was going to ask you, what do you think about NBC in particular?
It really disturbed me when I watched it. It really freaked me out, and it seemed like they were kind of playing into this kid's hand.
Yeah.
By doing it.
Yeah.
Because that's what he was saying. Like, now the world will know my message. Well, now it does. Thanks to NBC.
And, there's a reason, there's a very logical reason why he chose NBC instead of CBS, ABC, Fox, or any CNN. It's because NBC has the two networks.
Yeah.
There's the regular NBC, NBC News, and MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get maximum media coverage by going to NBC.
Yeah. Nobody accused the kid of being stupid.
Yeah, I mean, the kid, the young man, that's the other thing, too. A person like this is normally very intelligent.
Yeah.
They're very calculating. They have thought this thing out before they go on a rampage.
Yes.
This isn't just a random act. I mean, I do think it says something about our culture that we can push the mentally ill aside so easily, and then when they do something, we are shocked and aghast.
Right.
I mean, this has been going on for a few decades since Reagan basically closed down the mental health centers and put the mentally ill on the street.
Oh yeah.
We need to care for our mental.
Being a resident of New York State in New York City, I've been seeing more. And it seems like ever since Giuliani left office, the more mentally unstable have been appearing little by little, more and more.
Yeah.
And it's very scary, and it's a situation where you rub this person the wrong way, and all hell is going to break loose.
Yeah. But in all fairness, I mean, that's in every town, every city anymore.
Right.
there's mentally ill on the streets everywhere, and people wouldn't think in a rural area there would be that kind of situation, but there is.
Right.
It's 5 till. Let's go to Bakker's commentary about Dawn Imus, and I'm going to run the news, and then George and I will be back, hopefully, with Leonard Hayhurst.
Looking forward to it.
Hello, everyone out there in Radio Land. This is EM from 411 Media, guesting on Jason Easley's radio show. There's not going to be a name. There's no format. There's no weekly episodes. It's just me coming on randomly, spouting into a microphone about things. Jason asked me to talk to you tonight about what pisses me off in politics. Instead of talking about that, though, let's talk about Dawn Imus. As many of you know, Dawn Imus was recently released from his position of almost 30 years. 30 years, for those of you out there who don't have the privilege of knowing, is a long fucking time. It's a long fucking time to be married. It's a long fucking time to be at the same job. It's a long fucking time to be alive. And that's what he's been doing day in and day out. 30 years. 30 years now gone because of a mild comment. It was off color, yes. But in the overall context of the world today, it was meaningless. Was it stupid? Yes. Crass? Yes, also. Sexist? Certainly. Demeaning? Of course. But was it racist? Not so much. The biggest flaw in Dawn Imus' comment was that it wasn't funny either. It was probably particularly unfunny and somewhat confusing, I would suspect, for the white girls on the Rutgers basketball squad to be called nappy-headed hoes. What Dawn Imus was attempting to do was make a play on the Rutgers name, I feel, Rut being another word for fuck, and that, of course, is funny. They're fucker school, but that's not really funny either. Off-colored, nonsensical, facetious, tongue-in-cheek material like that can often be used as a comic device, but it has to be actually funny in order to function. Dawn Imus' biggest sin was that he wasn't funny. Should he have lost his job? I don't think so. Is that really what people think that should have happened to a guy who's old enough to be any one of those girls' grandfather? Do they want their grandfather put out of a job? I don't know. Maybe they do. And we got Al Sharpton involved. Al Sharpton, who is busy screaming racist once again at the top of his lungs for anyone and everyone in the vicinity to hear. I wonder if he actually pointed the racist finger at the rap groups that actually coined many of these terms. I would suspect not, but hypocrisy has been one of his stock and trades for time immemorial. I think what really irritates me the most about this bullshit is the actual Rutgers girls press conference, where you had a whole bunch of these girls all taking turns to get up and say their name and where they're from, and to talk about how hurt they were and their feelings were mangled and trampled, and how Dawn Imus didn't know any of them, as if somehow the targets of who people are making fun of are someone you should know. And they said that they were scarred for life. I wonder just how scarred for life and hurt the coach was after she signed her book deal over this entire fiasco. I read an interesting article in the Houston Chronicle before breaking ground on this piece, and it said that 54% of the people polled thought that the decision to fire Dawn Imus was the correct one, and 32% said that that was excessive. One of the persons saying that was excessive, interestingly, was John Kerry, and now you can add my voice to that list also. The man did not deserve to lose his job over an off-color comment. His whole shtick is being controversial. His whole shtick is off-color commentary. That's his stock and trade. They knew what they were getting into when they picked him up. I mean, CBS is full of shit for them to say that this was something so reprehensible that they had to take leave of his services and that of his producer. I could really make some commentary here about CBS, too. Remember Edward R. Murrow. Remember Dan Rather and how they went out. It seems that nobody can retire gracefully from CBS without a knife in their back. Here's your parting gift for years of service. Try not to get too much blood in your waistband. And another point about those girls. Is this really what Rutgers wants to teach its young women? That they should just be crybabies every time somebody says something that they don't like? They should just go whining to the media? Maybe next they'll get cut off in traffic and they'll be crying about that, having a press conference about how the driver who cut in front of them and cut them off in traffic hurt their feelings and scarred them for life. And maybe that person will lose something. I don't know, their driver's license or maybe their birthday or what have you. It's really ridiculous, though, for persons who are in the sports sphere and in the public eye as celebrities, if you will. It's really interesting for them to be able to get away with being this thin-skinned. All this says to me is ulterior motive. Don, I must let show up somewhere else. His name is too valuable, if nothing else, to secure him another position, but did this episode really need to happen? What did we learn? I'll tell you what we learned. The assholes are still assholes. Outside of that, we didn't learn a fucking thing. Not one goddamn thing. This has been EM. Thanks for listening.
That was EM, and this will be a recurring feature on the program. It is 2 o'clock, so let's go to Will in the News.
The political universe time is 2 p.m. Here is the news. A Wednesday 5-4 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld the 2003 Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. This marks one of the biggest decisions that the High Court has had to make on the issue of abortion since Roe v. Wade. Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority, wrote that, quote, "Whether the act creates significant health risks has been a contested factual question," end quote. He went on to write that, quote, "The Prohibition Act would be unconstitutional under precedents we assume to be controlling if it subjected women to significant health risks," end quote. In the ruling, the justices in the majority were Justices Anthony Kennedy, Chief Justice John Roberts, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi released a statement that said, quote, "I am disappointed. Criminalizing doctors for medically performing necessary procedures to save a woman's life or protect her health is wrong. The court's decision is a significant step backwards," end quote. As Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez was the center of attention during Thursday's Senate judiciary hearings regarding the firings of 8 U.S. attorneys, he found himself being bombarded with tough questions by the committee. Not only did the Attorney General face grilling questions from Democratic senators, but the situation got worse when support from Republican senators eroded. Republican senators told the Attorney General that his credibility has eroded, and 2 have called for his resignation. While at the White House during a press briefing, White House Deputy Press Secretary Dana Perino said that, quote, "As I have said many times, the President has full confidence in the Attorney General," end quote. In an unannounced visit to Iraq, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates told Iraqi officials that they must increase their effort to ease sectarian violence. He also said that the Iraqi government should not get comfortable with relying on the U.S. by saying that the U.S. commitment in Iraq was not, quote, open-ended, end quote. On Thursday, the United States had a hard time convincing Russia that an extension of Europe's missile defense system will not affect Russia at a NATO meeting in Brussels. In January, the United States announced that it plans to extend the, quote, missile shield, end quote, over Europe to protect it from, quote, rogue states like Iran. According to NATO Secretary General Jaap de Hoop Scheffer, quote, 10 interceptors cannot affect the strategic balance, and 10 interceptors cannot pose a threat to Russia, end quote. This is in reference to 10 missiles which would be placed in Poland without warheads, and a radar system that would be placed in the Czech Republic. Russian First Deputy Prime Minister Sergei Ivanov said that, quote, "We cannot understand what Eastern Europe needs this system for," end quote. And you are listening to The Political Universe here on Blog Talk Radio. Now back to Jason Easley.
It is now time for our featured interview segment on the program. I do believe that with us right now is Leonard Hayhurst. Leonard. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm fine. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. If I can remember to keep all the equipment plugged in, this should go fairly smoothly. Leonard, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, currently, and how you know me from, is I'm the Movie Zone editor for 411mania.com. And I do Ask 411 column every Monday, along with a bunch of other reviews, and just kind of keeping that place a little bit shipshape.
One of the best columns on 411 anyway is the Ask 411 movies. That's a fantastic column.
Thank you.
One of my personal favorites, because I believe Leonard actually, every time Leonard gets a question, he'll reference some older movie, and I'll be thinking the same thing. And I really thought I was the only person that watched older movies. And I always smile, and I'm like, oh yeah, somebody out there has TCM as well. No, but okay. So Leonard, what's on your mind right now? What's on your mind this week? Do you want to talk about any of the violence in film
Yeah, well, I know that that's what you wanted to talk about, and I'm sorry.
I'm hoping that we can move into some stuff that's a little bit lighter, because let's face it, it's been a heavy week.
Yeah.
It'd be really nice to lighten the mood a bit. What do you think about the Virginia Tech shootings? And thus far, I saw that one movie had possibly been blamed.
I hadn't seen that. What did they mention? Well, I'm not sure what ground you...
George?
Yes, I'm here, Jason.
I got you there.
Yep.
Are you aware of what movie they mentioned? It was an Asian film. It wasn't a wide-release American film. But did you see that?
Was it Battle Royal, maybe?
No. That wasn't it. It was a film, though, where they said somebody feels wronged and they take revenge on the people that have wronged them, and they write a phrase along their arms, and they thought maybe this had inspired him. But I tend to think that the general outline of the plot I just gave you can apply to just about every fifth movie ever made.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
There are quite a few revenge themed films that are out there. So
yeah, it's
very difficult
just
to pick on
one movie. It seemed they were picking on this one movie in particular because it was first of all an Asian based film, and it featured Asian actors. So I'm guessing that had a little more to do with it. I mean, no one's blaming Jackie Chan and Rush Hour for this. You know?
Well, I think a film. Violence in films can be a catalyst to violence in real life, but you got to take a look at that word catalyst. It's when you take one element and you combine it with another element to get a reaction. I mean, an average person isn't going to go and watch Grindhouse and jump in their car and run over debutantes because that's what Kurt Russell did in the movie. But if you take someone with a history of mental instability, of emotional distress, of abuse, of violence, and that seems to be the case here with the Virginia Tech shooter, then, yeah, a certain film, I think, can be a trigger. But, like with the Son of Sam killer, he said that he got orders to murder from his neighbor's dog. So the dog was his trigger. And what I'm saying with that is just, you know, not eliminating violence in films is not going to eliminate violence in society today.
I think
it can be a trigger.
You know the right-wing crusaders are going to look for an excuse. Or something to hang this on. It's got to be films. It's got to be rap music. It just can't be that the poor kid was mentally ill.
We
like to have an excuse.
Yeah, and that's usually the case. I mean, one of the most famous examples of a film that directly caused a violent act was with John Hinckley, where he became obsessed with Taxi Driver, became enamored with Jodie Foster, and in order to impress her, just like Travis Bickle does in the movie, he was going to assassinate a presidential candidate. He tried to shoot Reagan.
And not only that, but because of the film itself, because of Scorsese getting nominated for Best Director from that film, he had it was for Jodie Foster winning nominated for Best Supporting Actress. John Hinckley had sent Martin Scorsese a note saying that if Jodie Foster wins for what Martin made her do, then Martin Scorsese was going to become a target. And nobody really made much of a response to that. Nobody really made much of a big deal of it, mainly because Jodie Foster didn't win.
Another thing, and that's with the Virginia Tech shooter, too, is that there were warning signs. You know, there were – I think I remember hearing that he had actually been questioned by the cops on a stalking incident. This is the Virginia Tech shooter now. So, you know, and with Hinckley, too, and with him, too, there were these warning signs, but no one picked up on it or no one did anything about it.
And do you find that – do you think that – just you personally, do you think that anybody's at fault for not picking up on the warning signs? Is someone
called
for this?
To a degree, but it's very hard. I mean, because one single person wasn't privy to every thought in that guy's head or every incident that he did. I mean, if you were someone, like maybe, I don't know, like if he had, say, like a roommate there in college and he saw everything this guy was doing, hearing everything he was doing, well, that's one thing. But I think it's maybe harder for one incident, you know, one teacher sees something, one police report is filed, to connect all the puzzle, you know, to put all the puzzle pieces together. We can do that now because 2020 is always hindsight. But I think at the time it's hard, and I wouldn't say that one person should be walking around saying, well, it's my fault because I didn't catch this guy. I think that's erroneous.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, it's really tough. I mean, you went to a big school, an Irby campus. You know how tough it is to separate and pick out really dangerous people from just regular college kids.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe somebody's having trouble. Maybe somebody's homesick or having trouble adjusting to life on campus. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know,
somebody's a little disgruntled about a bad grade in class.
Yeah, I went to the university
from somebody who has the capacity to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to sound trivial, but especially at certain times in the semester, it's very stressful. Everybody's stressed out. Finals are coming up. Everybody's stressed out. It's tough sometimes to pick out regular college stress and teenage angst from somebody who could kill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's no justification alone, but I'm just saying it's a rough environment.
Yeah, and another connection with that is for, especially when you go to a larger college like Virginia Tech certainly is, and I went to University of Pittsburgh, and it certainly is, that was really my first exposure to a larger social environment.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a high school where I was in a class of like 130 people, you know, all together in school. There's maybe 500 kids. And then I go to college in Pittsburgh where the student body is a couple hundred thousand when you count all the satellite schools. And you have several hundred thousand people living in this large city. And especially when you go to a larger social environment like that, it can be shocking to the system, for one. And for two, you want to make connections. And if you don't do that, especially for a certain type of individual, they feel rejected. They feel like they're a failure, especially where girls are concerned. And I think that was a little bit with Virginia Tech shooter, too, because it seemed like he was very much kind of on the outside of the social circle there.
Now, I have to admit to both of you guys, I don't watch a lot of TV news or hardly any. So, I mean, I asked George this before the break. How do you think the media has overdone it, or have they done okay with this, Leonard, or where would you kind of fall on that question?
Well, right now I would say that they've done okay. I don't think it's been that exploitive. I think that that they've been pretty good on trying to provide a balance of examining, one, the shooter, two, what happened, and three, the aftermath. From what I've watched, it's been pretty decent, which is a breath of fresh air, really, from recent incidences with Don Imus and with Ann Nicole Smith, where they've been just exploitive and seems like they've just been trying to grab ratings and grab ratings and grab ratings with these horrible incidences. And with this, it seems like they're really being news reporters for once and not just trying to grab ratings.
I'd actually like to second that as well, especially with the in cases like Anna Nicole, in cases like Don Imus, and just like Leonard said. By the way, hello Leonard. I didn't get to say hello to you before.
Oh yes, hi George. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always a pleasure to work with you.
Kissing up to the boss.
What's that?
Kissing up to the boss.
Of course.
Yeah.
You gotta give it up to the boss.
You got him, man.
You know this man. This is one of the guys like responsible for me being where I am today, so hey.
Where is that exactly, George?
Working for a website for free, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
And we appreciate that.
What website would that be, George?
What's that? Oh, the website would be
411mania.com. What website would that be, George? There you go.
Yeah,
plug it.
I might as well just go for that plug, you know, like right away. But
yeah, that's what I was hitting you up for, and you just went working on a website for free, and I'm like, well, that doesn't really help us out, George. You're actually hurting our cause, George.
Yes.
It's the name. Okay,
let me just go for the throat then. Working for the Movie Zone, which Leonard does a fantastic job of editing and keeping together, on 411mania.com.
There you go.
/ movie.
Excellent.
Flash movies.
Sorry, I usually don't do this, but that was really funny. George has been unfortunately saddled with me by himself for the whole show. He's been kind of getting. We're integrating a couple of other people onto the show, so I usually have more people to work with. But when George just has to handle me, I almost feel bad for him. the questions just come from everywhere, and they're out of right field, and they're not on the sheet that I sent them like a few days ago, and the same thing I send you. I mean, I'll just kind of go wherever I feel.
I do have to say, you tend to pick up improvisational skills when you work for when you call into the show. So,
yeah, you'll learn to work on the fly.
Oh, yeah.
Now let's change gears a little bit. George, I asked George about this a couple of weeks ago. Leonard, summer movie season. What grabbed your eye?
Oh, summer movie
season?
Is
there anything you're looking forward to?
Oddly enough, I just got, we're not going to plug, I'll say EW, but we won't plug them.
Did
the famous pop culture magazine.
Do they help us in any way? No.
Well, they have a great overview here. I often say, because 411mania.com, let's plug them again, that they have a wrestling site, too. And I often say reading Entertainment Weekly is like when you read WWE Magazine for your wrestling news. It's about the same thing.
But they do
have a huge summer movie preview here that I'm looking over. And, of course, there are some decent blockbusters I'm looking forward to, like The Simpsons movie I think is going to be a lot of fun. Spider-Man 3 I think is just going to be as good as the other two. I'm seeing right here. I'm not keen on the Transformers movie, which a lot of people are going to get up for.
George?
I'm not.
I did not hang up.
You just committed a bit of blasphemy to George.
I figured I would when I said that. And that goes more back to...
I'm sure he's seen my MySpace page. He knows the struggle.
Yeah. Well, and that's not nothing against the Transformers. That's more against Michael Bay. I think it's going to be like typical Bay film. It's going to be blowing stuff up and shooting stuff up and just, cool to be cool, and I don't think it's going to be just a overall good movie. And I think the Fantastic Four sequel, which I can't believe got a green light, is going to be the same way, where they're just trying to be cool.
Well, they're also trying to relaunch The Incredible Hulk now, too.
I read that the other day with Ed Norton is supposedly going to take over the Bruce Banner character.
That could be incredibly interesting. I mean, Edward Norton is an interesting actor. It could be interesting depending on what direction they take it in.
I kind of see their take on The Incredible Hulk as almost like the Superman Returns of its period, because it's not a total reboot after just one film, and I'm really glad they did that. I'm really glad that even though they're not totally acknowledging the previous film, because I happen to be in the minority of people that really, really liked the Ang Lee version. But it seems like they're not going to retell the origin story and try to quote-unquote get it right this time or anything, because the film is starting out with Edward Norton's character, Bruce Banner, on the run already.
Yeah, I think that was a good way to go with it. And,
yeah.
I was a big fan of the old TV show, and that was the whole gist of the show was Banner on the moon.
On the run, yeah. It was a fugitive with Lou Ferrigno kind of thing, like.
Yes.
I like the fugitive immensely, and the original series of The Incredible Hulk. This is a collective maneuver to try to forget the Ang Lee movie ever happened. I think that as a franchise, they're just trying to shove that one off into the corner and sort of move forward.
True, but at the same time, basically saying that, if you just watch this film and don't watch the Ang Lee one, you're not going to miss anything. But it does help a little bit because not only are you dealing with the origins of the character, the Hulk, in the Ang Lee version, but you also get to see him basically do something that is not going to be associated at all with this new film. So they really don't have any danger of stepping on, the 2003 film's toes.
They're really two different. In my mind, there's always two different ways the comic book movies can go. They can go for the lighter fare, or they can take a step towards the darker, a la Batman Begins, a movie that I truly, truly enjoyed immensely.
Me too.
It was a fantastic movie. And I'm a big Batman guy. I've been since I was a kid. I mean, I'll admit it, I'm a closet Batman freak. So I watch all these movies, except I tried the Ang Lee version of the Hulk, and I swear I couldn't get through it.
It's definitely
an acquired taste.
There's a lot of unintentional laugh moments in that film. I saw that in the theater with a bunch of people. And when the Hulk fights the mutant dogs, people were cracking up. And at the very end, which you know, with a movie, it's very important to have a good outro. You have to have a good final scene, a good final line. And when he's in South America and he says, "You wouldn't want to make me, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry," which is the classic line from the old TV show. They said it in Spanish. I mean, people were busting up laughing in the theater that I was in. And also, the last 10 minutes of the movie made no sense. And that's, I know they do test screenings, and I would have to think the theater I saw this in was typical. So I had to ask myself, well, why can you catch all this stuff when you did the test screenings?
Why did you just go ahead and release this thing as it was?
Okay, yeah. Leonard, whenever we think about reading your columns, whenever we read what you write, whenever we listen to what you say right now, what kind of movies do you naturally gravitate towards as a fan?
Well, as I said, we talked, as soon as you got me on, we talked about older films, and I am a big fan of older movies. And so if I had my druthers and sit down and just pop in a DVD and watch something, I'm probably going to grab something from the classic period of Hollywood, 40s, 50s, even up into the 70s. But as far as today's movies goes, I like films that kind of harken back to not just that style, but that quality of filmmaking. Even something like Grindhouse, which I mentioned, which is probably the newest movie I've watched, I loved, because Rodriguez and Tarantino just sat down and said, we're going to harken back to the fun Grindhouse movies of the 70s, and it was part parody and part love, part homage, and it was fantastic, and it was a lot of fun.
I have a possible question for you. Just a possible question. Which period was better in Hollywood's golden ages, the 1930s or the 1970s?
I had that, I think, that question in my column one time, and what my overall answer was the best year for movies, period, was 1939. You had Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You had Casablanca was later, it was 42, but you had Gone with the Wind. And just so many great films that came out in 39. How Green Was My Valley was another one. But I think the reason why people point to the 70s a lot of the time is that there was a new avant-garde style in the 70s. And that was when we went from the classic studio tradition, even though the studio system kind of ended in the early 60s, into a modern type of storytelling visually and thematically. And being a modern audience, those films, I think, resonate more with a modern audience than films of the 30s and 40s, even though the acting and the filmmaking of that period is totally impeccable. And personally, for me, it's what I get drawn to.
Yeah. I mean, I will literally take a good Cary Grant movie over a good Name the Person of Today movie, a Tom Hanks movie any day.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my own preference. I gravitate more towards classic films. I was raised in a household where we watched those movies. So, I mean, the movies of the 70s are the ones that we see reflected in today's movie making.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, we're starting to get into, like, some of the 80s stuff, for better or worse. It's starting to be reflected in modern films today.
Yeah, but definitely with those guys in the 70s and stuff like Scorsese and Lucas and Spielberg, they were influenced by films of the 30s and 40s. You know, I tell people this all the time. Indiana Jones is basically your 1930s action film serial. If you've
ever seen, like, the Superman serials on movie channels, that's the same sort of thing that Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Indiana Jones franchise was.
Yeah. I mentioned 1939, another movie that came out then, Gunga Din. A Cary Grant movie where he is in, I believe they're in India, and there's this action story. If you watch Gunga Din, you watch Indiana Jones, there's a lot of similarities between the action set pieces in those two films.
Okay. I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen the same question. What is the greatest movie ever made in America? Hollywood cinema. Pick your number one. Leonard?
Okay, you know I'm going to say Citizen Kane.
Yeah, I knew.
I kind of.
You can defend it. Go ahead, but I would
agree with that. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, that's sort of the default Grace movie of all time.
Yeah.
But yeah. I really think it is. Even today, it stands up as maybe the storyline so much doesn't stand up, which is ironic since it's the only thing they won an Oscar for was the screenplay. But visually and acting-wise, it still hits on all cylinders. And it's a movie I've seen dozens of times. And I can still watch it and pick up something I haven't picked up on before. I think that's a true testament to the rewatchability of a film, that every time you watch it, you'll see something you didn't see before, or you'll get into it and follow it like you've never seen it before.
I see things in that movie every time I watch it. I've watched it, oh, God, I don't even know. Every time I pop in the DVD, I pick up something I missed before. And it's amazing that you can watch a movie a dozen, two dozen times, and it still does that for the viewer. Mm-hmm. It's just an impeccable piece of filmmaking. George, if you say the Transformers movie...
Oh, no.
I will come through this phone and ring your neck, George, and say the Transformers movie. I will fire you on the spot if you say the Transformers.
You'll fire him live on the air. He'll get all Trump on you, George.
Just pull out a little bit of the Slash wrestling moment. Just pull up, you know, do the whole Vince McMahon, you're fired.
We're delving into wrestling. There goes our audience. Just went from 10 to 3.
Anyway, to get back to the Slash movie section, I also, you know, like, happen to agree with both of you saying that Citizen Kane is an absolutely brilliant film. I love watching it. I love, you know, like, finding out all these different things about it. I love watching the DVD. I'm a huge fan of audio commentary tracks, and I think Roger Ebert's track is one of the best I've ever heard.
One of the best, yeah.
It is absolutely spectacular, and the best thing about that particular track is you can hear the love for that film just oozing out of the speakers. And, you know, like he really, whenever he's hooked on a specific film, you know, he will go just all the way with it, and that's, you know, it's one of the, you know, great things that makes the man who he is.
Go ahead, George.
Okay, but my particular, if I had to pick one, you know, like, you know, perfect film, something that can be so many different things to so many different people, and also in a major way, a film that uses the scope of a movie screen to its maximum effect. For me, it's 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Another classic.
Yeah. Now, odd that you would say that, because just this morning I watched on AMC their Movies That Shook the World episode about 2001.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen that, but you would probably
really
enjoy
that.
You know,
like, I definitely need to take a look at that in DVD.
Now we're plugging AMC, who also gives us nothing. Is there anybody else you would like to plug who doesn't do anything for us at all?
Oh, you know, give them time. Maybe they will.
Yeah.
Just send us DVDs and PCS.
I'm working on some things. I got some things in the pipeline that I can't discuss.
You can just say, AMC, as heard on the Political Universe.
Yes.
Yeah, as heard. Yes, you're all going to be excerpted, you know, and quoted tomorrow. That sounds like Elmer Fudd. And you're all going to be quoted tomorrow.
Of course.
On websites everywhere.
Of course. Now,
George loves AMC. Leonard says 2001 rocks.
continuing on with 2001, last year, the Ziegfeld Theater over here in New York City was nice enough to make that part of the Hollywood Classics that they were going to show on their big screen. They were showing a whole lot of different films, and it just so happened that 2001 was one of them. I made a point to be there for when they showed it, and unfortunately the house was not very big, and there weren't all that many people there, but the theater itself and the screen is humongous, and getting that, you know, like watching it on the movie screen for the very first time was such an incredible experience, and it really has become one of my all-time favorite experiences at a movie theater.
Okay, guys, it's time to pimp things, time to promote yourselves. Leonard, what do you want to promote?
Okay, well, you will totally dig this. I don't know, but I'm probably the first person on your show to actually plug a personal appearance. But I'm going to be at the Monster Bash Horror Film Convention. It's at the Four Point Sheridan outside the Pittsburgh Airport on the weekend of June 22nd. And that Friday night, I think it's going to be 1 a.m. It's a late show. I'm going to be hosting Plan 9 from Outer Space with my special guest, Conrad Brooks, who is in the film.
I knew I had for a reason, Leonard.
Yeah, and I'm going to be around there the whole weekend if anyone wants to stop in and rap with me. And I believe that Chad Webb, another writer on 411mania.com, is coming down special to be there the weekend with us.
Okay, guys, we got a few seconds left. I want to say, Leonard, if you want to come back on the show before the convention, feel free. George, we know where you are. We know where we can find you. For Leonard and George, this is Jason Singh. We'll see you next week in the Political Universe.
Hello?